This morning I'm thinking a little bit about the analogy of a bicycle, learning to ride a bicycle, for learning to meditate. And I think everybody who meditates is learning to meditate. So, you know, maybe there are times when people feel like they've got it. But I think it's temporary. And I think people who meditate are always learning to meditate. So, but if you use the analogy of a bike, say you don't know how to ride a bike, and so someone puts you on a bike, and then you're about to take off, push down the pedal so you can take off. But the first thing, before you notice the pedal, before you push down the pedal, you notice this amazingly attractive, interesting billboard on the side of the road. And your mind goes right there, you know, and you even get off your bike and go study the billboard. And you even forget that you were trying to be on the bike because this billboard is so fascinating. And then you remember, oh, I have to go back. I'm supposed to learn how to ride a bike. And so then we go back onto the bike, we get on, we get ready to push down the pedal again. And then on the other side, there's a billboard. A fascinating billboard with some amazing, important news. Something really grabs you, it seems really important. More important, the billboard is certainly more important than the bike. And after all, it's announcing the new iPod or something, you know, it's like, it's a major important thing. And some people's experience of meditation is that's as far as they get, because there's all these billboards that pop up. They get ready, they put themselves on the breath, they're ready to kind of push on the pedal of the breath or stay attentive to the breath. And this thought arises that is so compelling, so interesting. And the mind gets carried away into that thought and stays there for a long time, perhaps. And then maybe finally, there's enough resolve or enough letting go to not look at billboards anymore, and you're actually able to push down that pedal and stay with that breath. And you push down the next pedal, you stay with the next breath, and you're kind of wobbling down the road. But, you know, 10 feet down the road, there's another billboard. And so, oh, look at that, and you crash the bike. So 10 seconds down your meditative road, there's another thought that arises, and it grabs us. And but sooner or later, as we learn to ride the bike, we learn not to be caught by the distractions on the road, not the billboards, the people, the cars, the other things that might pull us off center. We learn to keep the focus on what we're doing enough so that we can stay present and keep going. So at some point in meditation practice, we have to learn to be able to maintain a focus so that we don't get pulled off so easily by our thoughts, our concerns, our preoccupations, the things that bubble up. And a big part of that is learning to develop developing wisdom or understanding around our thinking and our thoughts in meditation. And that kind of an understanding of how to relate to thoughts and how the role of thoughts in meditation is not something that comes automatically, but it's something we learn as part of the learning process as we engage in the practice and learn from what happens. And I remember one of my teachers saying, in meditation, there's nothing whatsoever you need to think about. And I thought that was pretty good advice. But there's one thing to kind of hear it as a piece of advice, and it's another thing for the psyche to believe that. And the psyche has a mind of its own. So I might know it kind of intellectually that's the case. I don't need to think when I'm meditating. But you know, here comes this juicy thought, this wonderful thought, important thought, or you know, some scary thought, some fear arises on something. And oh, the mind, the psyche thinks, oh, I have to go there and engage in that and try to fix it. I think some people, after a few years or decades or centuries of watching their mind go off in the thought, develop some wisdom, realizing that this is a waste of time. This is not really worth it. you know, I've solved this problem 92 times, and I'm still trying to solve it. And the amazing repetitive nature of our thinking is, you know, quite humbling, I think. And the number of times we can repeat the same memory, the same, we had this conversation, repeat the conversation, and wondering, could I have done a better rejoinder? Could I have, you know, dealt with it differently? So eventually we get tired, we realize this is a dead end. And that's very valuable to realize that's a dead end, and then we begin to lessen the grip of it. But to really be convinced in some deep way that in the period of time that we're meditating, that when we don't need to solve anything with our thinking, we don't have to fix anything with our thoughts, is a really important kind of deep-rooted conviction that sooner or later needs to be established. Without that kind of conviction, that's the case, I think that it's really easy for the mind to kind of pick up the thoughts, because, you know, that's where most people negotiate their life, is in the world of their thinking. So then a willingness to let go, a willingness to look at something else besides the world of our thinking. And the analogy of the bicycle is kind of nice, because if you're going, you're still wobbly, kind of biking down the road, if you get pulled, your mind gets pulled into the world of a billboard or pulled into the world of something happening out there, and you lose your focus on the road, you're going to crash. You're going to fall. And so there has to be learning some capacity to keep the attention focused continuously in the direction we're going, and kind of forward or in that kind of focus. And we all do that, I think all of us here probably do that with driving cars. If we can have the kind of focus we have when driving our cars or meditate, that's probably all you need. I mean, you're probably thinking also when you're driving your car. But you maintain that focus. You're staying steady. You don't lose track of the road. You know, you stay there. And you know if you are going to take in a billboard, and most people know to go like that. You know, it's very brief. And there's a kind of steadiness to that focus. Steadiness, you know, on the bicycle, in the car, steadiness. Staying there, keeping it there. So the same thing with the breath, keeping a steadiness on the breath. Staying there. So that we don't crash, so we don't fall off, keeping that steadiness. And I think that most of you who drive probably don't find it, now that you're driving for a while, you don't find it exceedingly stressful to drive. Probably, you know, you've kind of learned a skill of how to do that and keep that focus. So the same thing with meditation, you can learn a skill of maintaining a focus, and so that it's not stressful. Initially it might require work and effort, but after a while it's something you relax into and becomes more a steadiness you can maintain. One of the very important ways that some people, it doesn't work for everybody, but one very useful way of working with a thinking mind is not by engaging the thoughts or disbelieving the thoughts, or not by kind of understanding the thoughts necessarily and not where meditation's at, but it's to relax some part of the psychophysical being that is pumping up the thoughts, some tension or pressure in the system that's connected to thinking. And for some people, maybe people have a strong kinesthetic sense, maybe. For some people, it can be very a physical felt sense in the body of tension or pressure connected to thinking. And the more relaxed the person is, the more that tends to become clear. But sometimes tension, even subtle thoughts can have, if the person's sensitive enough, they might be able to see that as you take up that activity of thinking, as you get engaged in it, there is a kind of a little tightening of the jaws, a little tightening of the eyes or the cheeks, or a little tightening of the forehead or the shoulders perhaps, or in the chest or in the belly. There's a little tightening going on, a little contraction that happens somewhere in the body. Sometimes it can feel like pressure inside the head that somehow gets created. Or sometimes I've had the experience of sitting quietly, very peaceful, staying concentrated in my practice, being very grounded and centered. And then some really great billboard comes along, and my mind just goes, And there's a feeling inside of me that energetically, my sense of presence, my sense of energy is lifted up. Kind of goes from being grounded down here in my belly. And I feel kind of lifting up. My chest even sometimes gets lifted up and by it all. And I mean, if it's really arousing kind of thought, you know, you can kind of feel that the body straighten up. But just feeling energetically, because the center of gravity kind of gets lifted. And it's very interesting to see that lifting that happens in the energy field, energy level. So to kind of start becoming sensitive to physically, what's happening as you think? What's a physical manifestation of thinking? For some people, it can be very, very helpful. Because then if you can feel that tension, that contraction, then you can relax it. Maybe you can let go of it. Relax around the eyes, or the face, or the cheeks, or the neck, or the shoulders, or in the skull, you know, somewhere. Whatever it might be, to kind of relax it, soften it. The advantage of doing that is that if we let go of thinking, and the tension of thinking is still there, that tension is likely to it kind of creates the conditions where you're more likely to think again. But if you can relax the bodily formation, the bodily tension, then you're relaxing the conditions for further thinking. So if you're tense, you're more likely to think. If you're relaxed, you're less likely to think. So the tension, you know, as long as the tension is not dealt with. So some people find it very helpful to, when there's a lot of thinking going on and the thinking is out of control, to look, scan through the body and see where is there tension. Occasionally, you can find it in the thinking organ, the thinking brain, the mind that thinks. The mind itself seems like it's somehow not spacious, it's not open, it's not soft, it's not light, it's not transparent. The mind itself, the mind that thinks, feels like a muscle that's gotten heavy or dark or under pressure or narrowed or contracted or somehow. And so sometimes it's a matter, you can relax the thinking mind as if the thinking mind is a muscle. Another approach to thinking is to understand not the physical correlate to thinking, but to understand the emotional correlate to thinking, the emotional connection that's going on. And sometimes if there's a lot of thinking going on, there's probably some emotion that's either fueling it or been stimulated by it or somehow exists in relationship to that kind of thinking. And sometimes if you let go of your thoughts, but the emotion is still there, the emotion is like a factory that then produces more thinking. It's right there, ready to pump out more. And sometimes you need to kind of look around inside your being and see, realize I'm thinking a lot. See, what is going on here emotionally? And then drop down into the body and feel it emotionally. What's happening here? In the present moment, feel the fear or the excitement or the desire or the confusion or whatever it might be. Feel it in the body, feel it emotionally. And the longer we can feel and be present for an aroused emotional state, the more likely it is that it's going to settle. The more likely it is it's going to relax. And the less we attend to the emotional state, some emotional states will just keep chugging away. We'll just kind of keep kind of hijacking the whole scene. So sometimes with a lot of thinking, you want to look at the physical phenomena. Sometimes you want to look at the emotional phenomena and settle that and relax that. In his instruction on breathing meditation, the Buddha said, when a person breathes in a long breath, breathing in a long breath, they calm the bodily formations. When they breathe in a short, when they breathe out a long breath, they calm the bodily formations. When you breathe in a short breath, you calm the bodily formations. Breathe out a short breath, you calm the bodily formations. There's just can be this calming effect of the breath. Sometimes, as you breathe, to have each breath be a calming wave that goes through your body, calming wave that goes through some of these places of tension or holding or emotional arousal that exists. So to use your breath as a aid, as a help, as a tool, you don't have to turn away from the breath. Sometimes you can identify the physical or emotional aspect of a lot of thinking and then connect to your breathing, but then have the breath kind of, the wave of the breath, the experience of breath, the sensations of breath, kind of move through that part of your body as a calming wave, calming like a massage or something. Okay, I got to calm this down. And then eventually, when things are calmed down enough, then maybe no matter what the billboards are, you're not going to go look at them. You're going to stay, keep your steady focus on the road ahead and not get distracted. So, I hope all of you will keep learning meditation, because it's a never-ending process of learning how.